This is Fresh Air. Let's see if you remember this TV theme.
Felix the cat, the wonderful, wonderful cat. Whenever he gets in a fix, he reaches into his bag of tricks. Felix the cat, the wonderful, wonderful cat. You laugh so much your sides will ache, your heart will go pit-a-pat. Watching Felix the wonderful cat.
Felix the Cat had his own cartoon series on TV in the late 50s and early 60s, but if you know Felix only through the TV series, you've missed what makes Felix great. That's what John Kanemaker says, and he's the author of a new book called Felix, The Twisted Tale of the World's Most Famous Cat. It's the silent black-and-white Felix cartoons of the 20s that inspired Kanemaker's book. Kanemaker is an animator and animation historian. He's helped set the record straight on who the real creator of Felix was. Studio head Pat Sullivan took full credit for the cartoons, but animator Otto Messmer created Felix and directed the silent cartoons. There are several reasons why Kanemaker thinks Felix is a very important cat.
Well, he's significant as an animated character because he's the first cartoon superstar. He's the first cartoon to have a real personality in a series of cartoons. Also, he connected very directly with audiences. He was as popular with audiences in the 1920s as Charlie Chaplin or Buster Keaton, and is recognizable. He was also merchandised incredibly. His image in the 1920s appeared on articles of clothing, toys, dolls, hood ornaments for automobiles, all sorts of licensed merchandise at that time. He was as big as Mickey Mouse in his day, and he was 10 years before Mickey Mouse.
You also credit Felix as being the first character that showed that cartoon characters could be invincible.
Well, yes, he's wonderful because he celebrates the cartoon as cartoon. He doesn't try to fool you with illusions. He is what he is, which is a marvelous, magical creature who can change himself into anything he wants and take different parts of his body and make them into things that he needs to get what he wants. For example, his tail was incredibly versatile. It could become a baseball bat or a fishing pole as needed, and so on.
I think it's interesting his creator, Otto Messmer, felt that it was pointless to do things with animation that you could actually do with film. In other words, mm-hmm. why animate humans?
Mm-hmm.
So he liked the idea of doing an animal and making an animal move in ways that an animal couldn't really move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's throughout the history of animation, there are two viewpoints. One of them is the Winsor McCay or Disney point of view, in which they wanted to truly convince you of the reality of the characters so that when you see Dumbo separated from his mother, you cry. Or when Bambi's mother is shot, you also cry. But then there's another group, the Emile Cole or Tex Avery or Otto Messmer school of animation, which says this is an abstraction and you will be convinced of the world of the abstraction as soon as you see it. You don't really need illusory three-dimensional devices to convince you that Donald Duck lives in a cartoon world or indeed Felix the Cat lives in his cartoon world.
In creating the character of Felix, you say that Otto Messmer borrowed from Charlie Chaplin and also mm-hmm. borrowed from the Sammy Johnson character mm-hmm. in Sambo.
Mm-hmm.
Were there kind of racial stereotypes that the Felix character played on?
Yes, the films are full of the sensibilities and mores of the day. It's one part of his connection with the audience. There's all sorts of elements of sexism, racism, even a couple of examples of homophobia in the films themselves. They're isolated gags. They're part of the whole fabric of the thing, but they are there.
What are some of the typical storylines written around Felix early on?
Well, Felix was a very basic sort of character, and his needs were basic. He was always after food, shelter, or sex, and this never changed. But what's interesting in the films is how he achieved his goal. He could, as I say, change him into different objects. He could remove parts of his body, particularly his tail. And the visual gags are so wonderful. They just played on metamorphosis, which is a magic of animation that live action cannot duplicate. And were just wonderful little vehicles. I remember one character in a film called Romeow, 1927, in which he walks down his own leg as if it were a staircase, a wonderful, strange, impossible visual gag that's only possible in animation. You had asked earlier about mentioned the Charlie Chaplin influence, and that was true. It was actually a direct influence because in 1916, Mesmer animated for the Pat Sullivan Studio a series of Charlie Chaplin cartoons, and the eloquent body pantomime of Chaplin and also his facial expressions went directly into Felix the Cat when that character came around 3 years later.
Now, although Otto Mesmer was the creator of Felix and drew and directed the Felix cartoons, the credit and the copyright went to Pat Sullivan, the owner of the studio. Mm. How did he end up stealing the credit for Felix?
Well, he didn't steal it. He just assumed it. He was the owner of the studio and just assumed all sorts of credit and indeed all the money from the merchandising. Mesmer was a salaried employee, and that's how Mesmer thought of himself, and that's how he was treated. I often asked Mr. Mesmer, you know, years later, why he didn't protest, and he just was incredibly diffident about it. He said, well, I was a salaried man, and I made a good salary, and that was it. He really had no sort of entrepreneur quality about him, that all of the qualities that Pat Sullivan did have. And I do mention in the book that I think Felix would not have gone as far as he did without the contributions of both men. Mesmer is the artist who preferred to stay in the studio and work just on the films and create the stories and to direct the other animators. And Sullivan, who was a promoter par excellence and really fought for contracts, and there were a whole number of legal cases and legal battles that I looked up in the course of research for the book.
What credit did Mesmer get on the cartoons themselves?
None. No visual credit.
I can't believe, even though he thought of himself as a salaried employer, that he would feel comfortable seeing these cartoons that didn't have his name on it.
Yeah, I think he wasn't comfortable with it. I don't think he admitted that, perhaps to himself, but he never admitted it to me. He never had a mean or
self-assertive.
Yeah. He didn't. He never had an angry thing to say about Sullivan. He even, you know, defended him. Of course, Sullivan had a great many personal problems, and they all stemmed from his alcoholism.
Did he end up getting any of the financial credit for Felix before he died?
No. He did get credit for what his great contribution was to the art of animation, but he never shared in any of the financial rewards. He never owned a copyright to it, although he claimed that Sullivan said, you know, on his deathbed that he would put his name in the will. Well, I found the will and years of probate after that, and there was no mention of Mesmer in the will in terms of giving him anything.
If you're just joining us, my guest is John Kanemaker. He's written several books on the history of animation. His new book is called Felix, The Twisted Tale of the World's Most Famous Cat. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. John Kanemaker is my guest, the author of a new book on Felix the Cat. Felix the Cat ended up losing out to Mickey Mouse pretty early in the game. How did Mickey leave Felix behind him?
It was the introduction of sound to motion pictures that started and caused the demise of Felix the Cat. In 1928, in November, Walt Disney premiered Steamboat Willie, which was the first cartoon released publicly with Mickey Mouse, and it had a soundtrack, which was a marvelously innovative one. It had effects and music and a voice of sorts, and the great thing about it was it synced up perfectly with the action, and audiences were astounded and delighted by it. And Sullivan, because Felix was such a success, and because he was content with that, and also because of his alcoholism, didn't really plan to change Felix in any way. Mesmer was content to continue doing Felix as he had done, as a silent black and white character in these little visual gags and touches of personality. But Disney wanted to go further and was very ambitious and did take hold of the new technology, which he did with every new technology that came along, including three-tone Technicolor and multiplane cameras and feature-length films, and just made enormous strides immediately. And by the time Sullivan decided to compete or to catch up, it was too late. And the films that were made with sound, in the 20s and early 30s with Felix, were dreadful.
Now, after Sullivan died, what happened to the copyright?
Well, the copyright then went to his brother and his father in Australia. It took them a year to get it together to come to the United States to do something about that. The father died in the meantime. There were battles with lawyers going on. Felix really diminished as even a merchandising character. The doll manufacturers who did have Felix in 1930, they switched over to Mickey Mouse. By 1936, Mesmer was still doing the comic strips. That's what he did to survive. And then eventually he started making giant electric sign animation for the Douglas Lee Organization. But in 1936, they asked a studio here in New York called the Van Buren Studio, said, would you like to make three Felix cartoons in sound and in color? And he sort of hedged on that. And so the job went to a former Disney animator who made them look and sound and act just like Mickey Mouse or Silly Symphonies. So those failed, and it wasn't until the television series in the late 50s that Felix really revived as a character. But I feel that Mesmer, as an artist, perhaps he was afraid of the new technology, but also I feel he felt he couldn't improve upon the films that he made in the 1920s. To my mind, the little black-and-white silent Felix films are gems. I think they're little masterpieces that could never be improved upon. Adding sound and color and Disney illusory devices diminished rather than enhanced their appeal.
The work that you did with Otto Mesmer, the documentary you did on him, and mm-hmm. your attempts to restore credit to him, I mean, mm-hmm. people really in the know knew about that, but the public mm-hmm. at large really didn't. Do you think that really changed his life in any fundamental way?
I think he enjoyed the recognition. I do. I remember he was delighted to get fan mail, and he was always pleased to draw Felix for people. He spent his last days making these small drawings of Felix and finally signing his name to everyone.
You will be introducing a retrospective of the early Felix the Cat cartoons at the Museum of Modern Art on May 28th. For those of us who won't be able to make it to the museum, are the early Felix the Cat cartoons on video?
Some of them are, but they're public domain, so they're not really any large label. There's some renegade labels that have them, and you have to search for them. The television ones were released last year, and they're, I think, a complete grouping of those are available commercially.
But you don't really recommend those anyways.
Well, if you like the television series, of course.
Okay, but it wouldn't give us a sense of what Felix was originally like.
No, you have to see the black and whites. And as I say, some of them are available on tape, but not as many as should be, and they're not as accessible as they should be, in my opinion.
Well, John Canemaker, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
John Canemaker is the author of Felix, The Twisted Tale of the World's Most Famous Cat. This is Fresh Air.